Imagine an object just sitting in the middle of a glassy field. If you walk up and touch its outer metal shell, it's a freezing 4 degrees Celsius.
Right, like touching the inside of a refrigerator.
Exactly. But then, just a few centimeters inside, its core is roaring at over 1,000 degrees. And yet, somehow, the ice on the outside never melts.
It's a completely baffling image.
It really is. And today's deep dive isn't about alien technology, and it isn't about science fiction. It is about taking a mathematical crowbar to a mystery that has completely consumed the internet over the last few years. We are, of course, talking about the Bogosphere.
Yeah, the Bogosphere. It's such a fascinating case study in how we process the unknown as a culture. When this metallic sphere was reportedly discovered in Buga, Colombia, back in March 2025, the public reaction just fragmented immediately.
Oh, totally. It was everywhere.
Right. One camp claimed it was a crashed extraterrestrial drone. Another insisted it was a viral marketing stunt or maybe an elaborate modern art installation. But the stack of sources we are analyzing today, they completely bypass all of those cultural narratives.
Which is exactly why we are diving into this specific material. The sources we have in front of us use an incredibly dense mathematical modeling system known as the ODE-CCT framework.
This is putting it lightly.
Seriously. But to this framework, the Bogosphere is not a flying saucer. It is a hyper-advanced stationary technical instrument. Specifically, it functions as an aerosol generator, and its entire engine is based purely on extreme thermal differentials.
But before we go any further, we have to plant a massive red flag for you, the listener, because this is an essential empirical caveat.
Yes, please. We need to be very clear about this.
Right. So the extraordinary physical properties we are about to unpack, the impossible temperature gaps, the magnetic fields, they all originate from unverified field reports and social media documentation from Colombia.
I am so glad you paused to emphasize that, because as of the publication of these framework papers, no independent peer-reviewed laboratory has verified the chain of custody of this object.
Not at all.
Right. No mainstream scientific body has certified its physical properties. So, to be completely clear, we are not sitting here endorsing these claims as physical, undeniable reality.
Not at all. Our mission today is it's purely theoretical decoding. We are exploring a thought experiment that's been mapped out by this mathematical framework. We are essentially asking, if an object with these exact reported dimensions and properties were to exist, how would it mechanically function? What do the physics actually look like?
So if you are listening to this on your commute or maybe while making coffee, picture us putting on our engineering hats. We are going to focus entirely on the hardware today.
The nuts and bolts, yeah. So to speak.
Exactly. We are going to break down how this sphere theoretically operates as a miniaturized, highly efficient pump that uses nothing but temperature extremes to pull in air, boil it, and shoot it back out. Let's unpack the architecture first, because to understand how it generates aerosols, we have to understand a physical structure that seems to openly mock the laws of thermodynamics.
It really does. So the reports describe this sphere as having a seamless three-layer shell. You have a highly durable outer metal alloy, a middle layer characterized by self-healing micropores, and then a central inner core.
Okay, three distinct layers.
Right. And the ODE-CCT framework doesn't just look at this as layers of armor. It maps this exact description to something called a perovskite constraint lattice structure.
I want to stop right there because constraint lattice is one of those terms that sounds great in a physics paper but can be completely impenetrable.
Oh, absolutely. It's a mouthful.
Right. Like, if I'm picturing a lattice, I'm thinking of a garden trellis just, you know, on an atomic scale. What does it actually mean to have a perovskite constraint lattice?
Think of heat as a physical vibration. When a material heats up, its atoms vibrate, and they bump into the atoms next to them, passing that kinetic energy along. That's basic thermal conduction.
Right, like leaving a metal spoon in a pot of hot soup. The handle gets hot.
Exactly. But a perovskite structure is a highly specific geometric arrangement of atoms, usually a mix of different metals and oxygen. In this framework, the atoms in the sphere's middle layer are arranged in such a rigid, locked-in pattern that they physically cannot vibrate in a way that passes heat outward.
So they just don't bump into each other.
Right. It scatters the thermal energy waves, which are called phonons, essentially trapping them inside.
So it's acting like a thermos. But instead of using a vacuum gap to stop heat, the actual atomic structure of the metal just flat out refuses to let the vibration pass through.
That's a great way to put it.
Which brings us to the temperature profile, the part that completely shatters conventional engineering logic. The outer shell sits at 4 degrees Celsius, practically freezing. But that inner core, trapped inside this perovskite lattice, is operating at over 1,000 degrees Celsius.
And that lack of thermal conduction between the two layers is absolute. The heat from the core does not bleed to the surface at all.
I have to play the skeptic here on behalf of anyone who has ever touched a hot stove. In any normal machine, if you have a 1,000-degree core and the heat cannot escape, the machine just destroys itself.
It doesn't melt, yeah.
Right. The energy has to go somewhere. If the heat isn't dissipating into the surrounding air to cool the system down, like, how does this thing not just melt into a puddle of slag? I mean, it's like holding an active erupting volcano inside an ice cube without the ice ever melting.
Sounds impossible, but that perceived flaw is actually the genius of the design, at least according to the mathematical model. The framework flips the engineering paradigm completely upside down.
How so?
Well, in standard mechanics, you design cooling systems to dissipate heat so your engine can actually work without failing. In the bugosphere, that extreme temperature gap, the 996-degree difference between the freezing outside and the boiling inside, that gap is the engine.
Wait, really? The gap itself?
Yes. The lack of conduction isn't a glitch. It is weaponized thermodynamics. The temperature gap itself provides the potential energy driving the machine's primary function as an aerosol generator.
Okay, so that thermal differential is the power source. Let's look at how that actually generates an aerosol without a single moving part. If you're listening, keep that image in your head. An ice-cold surface, a boiling core, and tiny micropores connecting them. How does this turn into a pump?
So the framework breaks the aerosolization process into four distinct phases. Phase one starts at the surface. Because the outer shell is consistently held at 4 degrees Celsius, it acts as a cold side condenser.
Like a glass of ice water on a humid summer day.
Exactly like that.
Yeah.
It extracts humidity directly from the ambient air around it. It literally pulls moisture out of the atmosphere, forming condensation on the outer layer.
It's sweating. It's actively harvesting water from the environment simply by being cold.
Precisely. Now, phase two, that liquid condensate has to move inside. It is drawn inward through that middle perovskite layer via the self-healing micropores.
Okay, so it gets sucked in.
Right. The framework suggests this happens through a combination of capillary action. You know, water naturally pulling itself through tiny tubes, and electromagnetic transport. The water moves from the freezing exterior toward the immense heat of the interior.
Moving straight toward the volcano. And phase three is where things get violent, right?
Oh, very. Phase three is the flash vaporization. As that liquid nears the 1,000-degree core, it hits a massive thermal wall. The water doesn't just gently boil, it instantly flash vaporizes.
Just turns instantly to steam.
Right. But here is the critical mechanical detail. Because the internal geometry of those micropores is so strictly machined, the water doesn't expand into chaotic, uncontrolled steam. It is forced into highly specific microdroplets, measuring exactly 0.3 to 5 micrometers in size.
I caught that detail in the source material, and it's deeply alarming. For anyone unfamiliar with respiratory metrics, 0.3 to 5 micrometers isn't just some random measurement.
No, not at all.
That is the exact mathematical sweet spot for respirable aerosols. Droplets that size are small enough to completely bypass the human body's upper respiratory defenses and travel deep into the lower lungs. But they are large enough to carry a meaningful biological payload.
Which leads directly into phase four, natural convection. You have these perfectly sized hot droplets in an enclosed space. Hot air rapidly expands and rises. The sheer kinetic force of that flash vaporization acts as a pneumatic press, forcefully pushing those hot microaerosols back out through the surface pores and into the surrounding air.
It's just the ultimate expression of elegant design. When you look at the entirety of that process, it is essentially a high-tech humidifier. It pulls in moisture, boils it to a precise specification, and exhausts it.
And it does all of this through pure thermal physics. No fans, no mechanical pumps, no noisy compressors.
Like, no moving parts.
Exactly. It is entirely passive, mechanically speaking. However, there is a secondary mechanism that the framework highlights, which makes this system far more than just a thermal pump.
Okay, lay it on me.
The field reports claim the sphere generates its own 12 Tesla electromagnetic field. And remarkably, there is zero magnetic leakage. It doesn't set off compasses or magnetometers even a few feet away. The field is topologically confined to the immediate geometry of the sphere.
Wait, let's unpack the scale of that, because a 12 Tesla field is immense. That is roughly the strength of a high-end medical MRI machine somehow trapped inside a metal ball sitting in a field.
Yeah, it's an incredible amount of force.
If there are no moving parts to power, what is a magnetic field of that magnitude actually doing? Is it interacting with the water droplets themselves?
You're exactly on the right track.
Yeah.
The framework identifies the 12 Tesla field as an electrostatic charger. We are dealing with two specific forces here, thermophoretic and electrophoretic forces.
Let's break those down.
Sure. So thermophoresis is the phenomenon where particles in a gas are pushed away from a hot surface toward a colder one. That helps eject the droplets out of the sphere. Electrophoresis involves the movement of particles relative to an electric or magnetic field.
Okay, so the droplets are passing through the field.
Exactly. When those microdroplets are ejected out of the pores, they pass through this intense 12 Tesla boundary. As they pass through, the field strips or adds electrons, giving every single droplet a uniform electrostatic charge.
Oh, wow. I see where this is going. Because every single droplet holds the exact same positive or negative charge, they physically repel each other, just like trying to push the identical poles of two magnets together.
That's the exact mechanism. If the droplets didn't have that charge, they would naturally collide in the air, clump together into heavier drops, and simply fall to the ground like rain.
Which would defeat the purpose of an aerosol.
Right. By forcefully charging them, the sphere ensures the particles repel one another, keeping the aerosol cloud invisible, suspended, and drifting in the air currents for significantly longer periods.
So the thermal differential does the heavy lifting of creating the aerosol,
yeah.
And the magnetic field acts as a preservation system to make sure the cloud stays airborne. It is a completely self-contained micro HVAC system.
It really is.
Which brings us to the most unsettling question of this entire deep dive. If this device is perfectly engineered to pump perfectly sized, magnetically suspended aerosols into the air, what is it pumping? I mean, water vapor alone doesn't require this level of engineering.
No, it doesn't. And this is where the framework transitions into biological analysis, introducing the concept of biological vector activation, or BVA. If you look at the X-ray schematics provided in the reports, there are 18 tiny microspheres surrounding the central core.
I noticed those. At first glance, they look like decorative bumps, or maybe structural rivets holding the inner core in place.
The ODE CCT framework completely dismisses the idea of decoration. It categorizes those 18 bumps as specialized sample chambers. The theoretical model suggests these chambers are designed to hold lyophilized biological payloads.
Lyophilized just simply means freeze-dried, right? Suspended in a state where biological decay is completely halted until it is reintroduced to moisture.
That's right. And the sources are not vague about what might be inside. They specifically point to the potential for hemorrhagic fever viruses like Marburg or arenaviruses like Lassa or Junin, pathogens that are incredibly lethal when inhaled.
Oh, man. So the mechanics of the payload delivery are deeply integrated with everything we've just discussed. The water is harvested from the freezing exterior, drawn through the micropores, and channeled into these chambers where it rehydrates the freeze-dried viruses.
Exactly.
That mixture then hits the 1,000-degree core, flash vaporizes, gets magnetically charged, and is pumped out as an invisible viral aerosol.
It's a terrifyingly efficient system.
But wait, how does the machine know when to do this? If it's a passive system, wouldn't it just constantly run until it's out of payload? Earlier, we mentioned the micropores were self-healing, but the sources also describe them as an active biological gate. How does a metal pore open and close without wires or computer chips?
Through the physical properties of the materials themselves. The framework suggests these pores act like microscale bimetallic strips or phase change materials. They physically warp and dilate only when exposed to a very specific external trigger.
Like what kind of trigger?
It could be a specific ambient temperature, or more likely, they are calibrated to react to the microelectromagnetic field generated by a human body approaching the sphere. The gate physically changes shape to allow the moisture in only when a target is near.
And the sources point to the alleged physical effects on the people who handled the sphere in Colombia as, well, theoretical proof of this operation. The reports note the handlers experienced sudden dizziness, severe nausea, and acute lymphocyte DNA damage.
Yes. The lymphocyte damage is the critical signature here. Lymphocytes are your white blood cells, right? They're the frontline soldiers of your immune system. Rapid lymphoid depletion, where those cells are destroyed en masse, is the hallmark early phase signature of exposure to filoviruses and arenaviruses.
They attack the immune system surveillance network first.
Exactly. The mathematical model views the handler's symptoms as the exact BVA collapse signature you would expect from this mechanism.
But the environmental effects left behind by the sphere might be even stranger than the biological ones. According to the field reports, when the sphere was sitting on the ground, it created a highly precise 3-meter kill zone.
A very specific radius, yeah.
Within that exact 3-meter radius, the grass completely dehydrated and turned to ash. The soil microbes dropped to absolute zero. It was completely sterilized. And the soil itself had an abnormal concentration of anions, which the framework classifies as a chemical exhaust residue. They call this sterile zone a hexagonal Voronoi cell.
Right, a Voronoi cell, in mathematics, is a region defined by the distance to a specific point. In this framework, it represents a mathematically defined probabilistic cluster of dead biological space.
I have to challenge the logic of the framework here. If we accept the premise that this is a highly advanced biological weapon designed to disseminate a viral payload, why would it have a hard 3-meter limit?
It does seem counterintuitive.
If I am engineering a bioweapon, I want it to act like a gas leak. I want the wind to catch it, diffuse it, and infect the widest possible geographic area. A strict 3-meter radius seems like a terrible, almost counterproductive design flaw for a weapon.
It absolutely seems like a flaw if you are applying classical physical diffusion to the scenario. Like if you spray perfume in a room, it spreads chaotically, getting gradually weaker the further you get from the source. But the ODCCT framework explicitly states the sphere does not operate on classical diffusion.
So it's not a mistake.
No. That 3-meter radius isn't a failure of the aerosol to spread. It is a strictly programmed, intentional boundary.
But how do you program a cloud of gas to stop at 3 meters?
By controlling the physics that keep it suspended. The framework calls this information theoretic localization. The sphere dictates exactly how far the biological effect can travel using an e-checksum spatial decay.
Okay, you're going to have to translate that for me.
Think back to the 12 Tesla magnetic field. That field gives the droplets their charge, so they repel each other. But magnetic fields decay over distance. The framework suggests that at exactly 3 meters, the magnetic influence of the sphere drops below the threshold needed to maintain the electrostatic charge on the droplets.
So the moment the aerosols drift past that invisible 3-meter line, they lose their repulsive charge.
Yes.
They instantly clump together, become too heavy to float, and fall harmlessly to the ground.
Exactly. It creates an exponential drop-off, what physicists call an E-fold distance. At 0 meters, on contact, you have maximum thermal and biological effect. Between 1 and 3 meters, the extreme heat and targeted payload kill the vegetation and microbes. But the instant you cross the 3-meter boundary, the effect drops to zero.
That is wild.
The sphere creates a discrete, localized block of sterile space. It is executing a highly specific operation within a fenced-in mathematical yard.
That concept, that you can have absolute surgical control over the dissemination of an airborne virus, is terrifying. It's not a chaotic bomb, it's a scalpel. It implies a mastery of thermomagnetics and fluid dynamics that feels, honestly, completely alien.
It does feel very beyond us.
And yet, when you reach the final sections of these sources, you realize something profound about why this framework even exists. The authors didn't write pages of dense mathematical proofs just to solve a viral internet mystery in Colombia.
No, the framework is using the bogosphere as a means to an end. The authors view the sphere as a calibration artifact, a Rosetta Stone.
This was the chilling aha moment for me when I was reading through this. The authors are using the bogosphere as a perfectly scaled down, easily observable model to prove a much larger point. The core mechanics we just spent 20 minutes dissecting, a freezing condenser pulling in moisture, a superheated evaporator boiling it, and the resulting aerosolization, they are not exotic.
Not at all.
They are the exact same mechanics found in mundane, everyday city infrastructure. Specifically, the global HVAC systems and district heating networks that run beneath the streets and inside the buildings you and I walk into every single day.
The translation the framework makes is direct and incredibly alarming. If you look at a major city's district heating system, you have massive networks of steam pipes running underground at temperatures upwards of 300 degrees Celsius. In the framework's model, that district steam pipe is the inner core of the bogosphere.
And the freezing outer shell.
That would be the chilled air returns and condensate pans located in the commercial HVAC systems connected to those utilities. Those units often sit constantly at 4 degrees Celsius, pulling humidity out of the air in office buildings.
So what the authors are really saying is that our own cities are already built like giant sprawling bogospheres.
Yes. The framework mathematically proves that you do not need a hyper-advanced metal orb to launch a localized biological attack. A malicious actor could hijack the mundane infrastructure already built into the city. By utilizing these exact same thermal differential mechanics, they could use the massive temperature extremes already present between the heating pipes and the cooling units to generate massive, invisible aerosol plumes.
The building itself becomes the weapon. The HVAC system pulls in the moisture, the steam pipe flash vaporizes a payload introduced into the system, and the building's ventilation pushes it out into the offices.
It essentially scales the theoretical physics of the sphere up to the size of a skyscraper.
Wow. So bringing all of this together for you listening, we started with a mysterious object that most of the world dismissed as a UFO sideshow or a hoax. But by applying the rigorous mathematics of the ODE-CCT framework, our sources strip away the science fiction.
Right, they ground it in physics.
They break the sphere down into a passive thermal differential aerosol engine, a device that uses nothing but the extreme gap between an ice-cold shell and a boiling core to pull in moisture, rehydrate a biological payload, and distribute perfectly sized, magnetically charged viral aerosols within a mathematically perfect 3-meter radius.
And we really must reiterate our neutrality here at the end. Whether the bugosphere physically sat in a field in Colombia, exactly as reported, or whether it is an incredibly elaborate fiction designed to mimic advanced technology, the mechanical theory behind how it would work is logically coherent. The physics of thermal differential aerosol generation are real, and they are mechanically terrifying.
The sphere simply serves as a proof of concept for the physics, which leaves us with a final, highly provocative thought from the forecasting section of our sources, because the authors of this framework don't just look backward at what might have happened in Colombia, they look forward, and they predict a potential future event based on this exact mechanism, but scaled up to a massive degree.
The forecast specifically points to the Philadelphia-Baltimore I-95 corridor.
The scenario they outline is visceral. Just imagine a heavy summer thunderstorm rolling across the East Coast, torrential, freezing rain pouring down into the streets. Now imagine that cold storm water flooding the underground utility trenches and hitting the century-old district steam pipes running beneath those city's pipes that operate at a staggering 245 degrees Celsius.
It's a huge thermal shock.
Exactly. The sudden, violent introduction of cold storm water against those superheated pipes could trigger the exact flash vaporization mechanism we've been talking about, but on a macro scale.
If a biological payload had been passively staged within that infrastructure, the thunderstorm acts as the trigger. It wouldn't be a 3-meter radius. It could turn miles of mundane city infrastructure into a citywide aerosol generator.
It is a stark reminder that the built environment surrounding us is absolutely humming with extreme energy potentials. So, the next time you are walking down a city street and you see that white steam rising out of a manhole cover, or you feel the blast of freezing air venting out of a commercial building, take a second to think about the invisible temperature differentials happening in the pipes all around you. Like a strange metal box found in a field, a city street might look completely normal, right up until you understand the incredible forces actually at play just beneath the surface.